You're listening to Design Atlas Season 2.
Hi there. Before we get the show started, we wanted to let you know that some of the sound effects you'll hear in this episode came from Saskia's and Colin's expeditions to Antarctica. We really appreciate them letting us use the sounds they recorded to enrich your listening experience. Photography is all about capturing the moment. From events, to landscapes, to scenery, wildlife, and more, a photographer's goal is to always tell a story through still and moving images.
This is our 10th and final episode of Season 2 on Design Atlas. And to celebrate, we're going to take you somewhere extremely cold. And I mean really cold. And that location, my friends, is Antarctica.
Meeting up with two professional photographers, we'll be exploring what it's really like to go on an expedition to one of the most sparsely populated regions of the world. Maybe not if you're a penguin, but you won't find many other humans down there. Antarctica, being the fifth largest continent of the world, is almost entirely covered in ice. In fact, only about 0.4% of the rocks have ever been exposed and studied due to the massive ice sheets covering the region. Given the distance and remoteness, Antarctica is an untouched natural paradise for photographers. In today's episode, we'll meet with award-winning photographers Saskia Colson and Colin Tennant. Residing in Scotland, they've been to Antarctica numerous times, and each time they make their journey, they're there for at least one-third of the year.
We'll learn about the equipment they use, the precautions they need to take, and the challenges they face to capture the most captivating imagery, always keeping in mind the story they are trying to tell.
So without further ado, let's board our ship to Antarctica and meet up with Saskia Colson and Colin Tennant.
And you just see penguins porpoising in the water. It's like the coolest thing ever. You're like, no way. Like, I don't ever see that anywhere else in the world.
I'm Colin Tennant.
And I'm Saskia Colson.
And we're an award-winning artist partnership who develop projects through a lens-based practice. And we combine genres of documentary and fine art.
We create artistic, documentary, and environmental work for a wide range of clients and organizations, as well as our own personal projects.
To do this, we collaborate with many different communities, individuals, and draw inspiration from historical, creative, and ecological references.
We aim to make works that spark conversations about the past, present, and future of our man-made and natural world.
We're always learning and reflecting on our own practice and seeking to push ourselves further.
Saskia and Colin's introduction into photography are quite different from each other. However, they've really enjoyed coming together and creating work as a team. For Colin, his journey into photography began on his 16th birthday.
My mum bought me a camera for my birthday. That was really the first time I'd ever sort of explored photography. I had this camera. It was a 35mm film camera. It wasn't particularly expensive or fancy or anything like that, but I really fell in love with it, and I started documenting my friends and things we would get up to, like just kind of fun stuff. I would be like our friend's documenter, I guess, and that's really where my love of photography came from. It just became a hobby and something that I really enjoyed doing. And I would stay up late and like photograph the sunset. And I would like, when I got a car, you know, when I turned 17, I got this really old broken down car, and I would like drive to the beach and like photograph the waves. And I just kind of fell in love with it. So that's how it began, really. And then it took me a little while to maybe work out that it could be a career or something that I pursued as an actual occupation.
Saskia's introduction began a bit earlier in life. With both her parents working as photographers, Saskia was practically born with a camera in her hands from day one.
My journey was that both my parents are actually photographers. They met at National Geographic and they were photographers there for many years. And so I kind of grew up with photography around me. And it was almost intuitive that I had a camera in my hand from a very early age. I learned a lot from my parents, specifically my mom, because my dad went off to be a photo editor and my mom continued to be a photojournalist. And she actually took me on quite a lot of assignments when I was growing up. And that was my first exposure to photography. And I learned a huge amount from her and kind of working in the field. And then I went off to study photography. I actually kind of took a little bit of a different route after we graduated. I kind of went down an academic route and I ended up getting a PhD in design, actually. My dad unfortunately passed away a few years ago. And I think that made me realize, because of that connection I had had with him in photography, that photography was really a true passion of mine. And that kind of helped me see that that's where I wanted to go again in my own creative practice. And that, in addition to conversations that we've been having together about our own practices coming together, were really what drew me back to photography.
Saskia and Colin both studied fine art and photography at the Glasgow School of Art, which is where their collective journey began.
There's a lot in terms of our collaboration. We met at art school and we trained as photographers and we've lived our life together. And then through that, we've come back together as a partnership, a creative partnership. Glasgow School of Art is quite small classes. So we're about 22 pupils in total. And so we're just friends.
That then became a little bit more. When you're in art school, you're always having critiques and you're always sort of talking about your work and questioning your work. So we actually had a good relationship, and why we made the photographs we were making and why we were pursuing the projects we were pursuing. So we had quite a good creative relationship even prior to sort of becoming an item.
After they both graduated in 2007 from the Glasgow School of Art, they decided to pursue slightly different creative endeavors.
Colin began his freelance photography business and Saskia continued on in her academic pursuits.
For the first couple of years, you know, we were just kind of working and trying to, you know, work out what we were going to do with ourselves. And then I sort of went freelance and decided I was going to try and make a living as a photographer. And that was quite a big step for me because I was a little bit unlike Saskia. I didn't really grow up with people that worked in the creative industries and I didn't really know many people that were doing that, other than yourself, obviously, and your mum and dad. But they, you know, they travelled all the time. We didn't really hang out with them. So I kind of started doing that. And almost at the same time, you started doing your master's and going down your kind of academic route. And then about 5 years after that, when you'd sort of completed your PhD, and I'd had 5 years of basically scraping together an existence as a freelance photographer, we decided to sort of then join forces.
And join forces they did. Saskia and Colin really wanted to tell the story of how beautiful our planet Earth is and show their global audience through an open dialogue of imagery the environmental issues that we face, while at the same time finding ways to abstract and communicate the natural environment.
After I'd finished my PhD and we had decided that we were going to work together creatively, it wasn't just about the timing. It was about our kind of shared interest in practice and then also our shared interest in using real kind of issues that meant a lot to us. So issues around the environment, around human connection with the environment and land. Because what I saw in academia was that there was a lot of really interesting research coming out, but a lot of people don't find out about these things because it actually takes, you know, visual storytelling to really connect with people. And that was one of the things that we really wanted to, that's why we wanted to collaborate, is because we wanted to make powerful visual stories about things like the environment that actually told these stories, told and communicated what was going on in the world and hopefully have an impact.
And we kind of felt that with our photography and our filmmaking, we had an opportunity to make work about subjects we care about and also be able to try and reach wider audiences with it. And from my personal point of view, the first kind of 5 years of being a sort of freelance photographer and then a filmmaker, I was sort of doing any type of work that I could really just to make a living. And it was kind of getting to me a little bit because sometimes you end up working on projects that are maybe not, they don't necessarily mean as much to you or not necessarily in line with your own kind of morals and ideas, really. So we kind of got to that stage. It's like, well, let's set up our own company and let's really use these kind of three pillars like photography, filmmaking and research to underpin our collective practice. And that's why we sort of set up our own company and then started trying to self-initiate projects or search out projects that were more meaningful to us both. You know, when you work professionally, you build up a confidence. You know, it takes a while until you realize, right, actually, you know, I'm a professional. I'm actually quite good at what I do. People want to hire me. I can deliver. I can take a brief and deliver on that. And so I think for me personally, I just became more confident and I understood my professional practice more. With yourself, Saskia, like doing your academic work, you'd kind of learned a lot about the subjects that we were wanting to approach through our photography and filmmaking and research. So I think probably through you doing that, you had this sort of huge knowledge base about it.
It wasn't just one day to the next, everything shifted. I feel like we're still, you know, kind of in that gradual development phase of trying to figure out, because it's something that is new to us. We've been working together for over 5 years, but it still feels like, you know, every day you're kind of taking on or growing a little bit more from it. And also different kind of clients, we still have to maintain a kind of balance between our personal projects and the work that maybe pays the bills as well. And that's just the nature of being freelance, I think, in today's world.
I guess maybe that's just because we're more experienced now and we have a stronger portfolio and, you know, we can maybe attract different types of clients now. But even if we're doing what would be regarded as projects that are initiated by clients rather than our personal projects that are initiated by us, we still try and work with clients that are in line with our sort of ideas. So NGOs and not-for-profits, charities that are sort of tackling some of the issues to do with cultural activity or environmental issues, things like that. So we're just trying to be a little bit more kind of clever about who we work for and the projects that we take on.
For Saskia, growing up with her parents, who were both photographers at National Geographic, gave her some really unique experiences. We asked her if she could share a few of those stories with us.
I was very close to my dad and we shared a lot of common interest around photography and we shared a very common aesthetic as well. But my dad had actually left the National Geographic to take a job as a photo editor when I was quite young. So my experiences of traveling around the world were primarily with my mom, and she would go off on assignment for 3 to 6 months at a time. And occasionally I got to go with her when I was a little bit older. I got to basically travel around Italy with her for a month because I was on my summer holidays and I was 9 years old and I was with her and her assistants and they were all very lovely. And we went to a lot of different places, but we went to an archaeological dig where she was working quite a lot on kind of capturing the story of the past and trying to put it into the present. And I think that's where I've got a lot of respect for my mom's practice, but that's where her real strength is being able to tell a historical story in present day and to make it relevant to people. I spent quite a lot of time with her in Iceland as well, and doing a story on the Vikings, which was obviously quite important for her and for me because we're Danish. And so it kind of draws back on that past.
One story that Saskia specifically remembers vividly as a child was an encounter with the Italian mafia.
The mafia was protesting the parade.
That's right.
And then things got really quite intense towards the end, because at the end of the parade, they go up to a church and they get a statue of Mary, I think, and they put her onto a carriage. And the carriage is made of all these paper mache
religious symbols.
Yeah, iconography and stuff. And then they take the carriage and they go really quickly back down through the city, through all these windy roads. And as they do that, people like rip bits off of it so that they can keep bits of the paper mache carriage. And things were just getting really, like, really intense at that point, right when they're about to release the carriage. And I remember seeing actually the mafia. This is like the only time that I've seen them, and it was quite scary at the time when you're 9, and my mom sending me away with one of her assistants, and she had to stay there and photograph the whole thing.
Saskia's first time to Antarctica was back in 2008 with her parents, where she experienced life aboard a vessel owned by a company known as Lindblad. The vessel took photographers, scientists, geologists, and others to the region.
The connections that Saskia's family had made during those trips was the connection that led both Colin and Saskia to go on the trips to Antarctica together as photographers.
So Saskia's mum and dad worked the National Geographic expedition ships that sometimes travel to Antarctica. They'd taken Saskia as a guest in 2008 and 2009. So that was like your first experience of Antarctica. Saskia's mum subsequently worked on various kind of ships doing expedition work. She befriended a couple that were on one of those expeditions, and the woman was a keen filmmaker, and she had been shooting a lot of underwater footage, and she was looking for a film editor to help her edit the footage. And Saskia's mum, being the very kind person that she is, said, "Oh, what, you should get in touch with my son-in-law." And so then I got in touch with her and went and edited this underwater film for her. And at the same time, there was another filmmaker on the expedition ship that I went on. And he was working for another expedition company. And we just kind of hit it off a little bit. And he said, "Oh, would you be interested in maybe working on some of the expedition ships?" And I was like, "Sure." But I didn't really think much of it. He was from New Zealand. Anyway, 6 months pass, and he phones me up and says, "Do you want to go to Antarctica? And can Saskia come as well?" Because he knew that Saskia was a photographer and filmmaker. So the company that he was working for, that he was kind of recruiting us for, really wanted like a couple. So it was just kind of one of those things where, you know, you meet people in your industry, or you work in a job and it leads to another job. And that's kind of how it started.
That was in 2017. We went down there for the first time together. And we've been going back for every season. And when we say season, it's the summer season for Antarctica, because that's really the only time that you can get down there. So that's from November to March is their summer. So we've spent quite a few months there for the past, well, obviously we've not been this year, but the 3 years before that.
We would usually work on a small ship, and we'd travel down from South America, from Ushuaia in Argentina, to Antarctic Peninsula, and we'd spend like a week or 10 days there, including the crossing. And then we would come back, and we would do that maybe 4 or 5 times within that season.
People go there because they want to go and see Antarctica, but we work with a team, an expedition team, and a lot of the other members of the team have scientific backgrounds, so they're either marine biologists, some of them are geologists. There's also historians, just lots of different people that through their career have learned quite a lot about Antarctica, or maybe have actually spent seasons in some of the research bases.
The idea of having this expedition team is really to try and educate those people. Some of them may be photography and filmmaking enthusiasts, and they want to hang out with like Saskia and I quite a lot, but some of them are maybe really more into the science behind it, or the wildlife, the kind of ecology of it. So there's a lot of different people on the ship that go there as a sort of paid guest. But our expedition team is made up of like lots of scientists. I mean, people that have like polar medals and
have spent, like, they've wintered in Antarctica, which is quite a big thing, you know. So yeah, some really fascinating people from all over the world as well. It's really multicultural, which is kind of a wonderful environment to be working in.
We learn so much from them because obviously our expertise and our background is film and photography. We knew and we researched a bit into Antarctica before we had been down, and I had the experience of being down there beforehand. Every single time we're down there, the conversations that we have, there's such a wealth of knowledge from the team that we work with, and we really appreciate. They're always very giving to us in terms of what they know.
When Colin and Saskia boarded their vessel to Antarctica together for the first time, Saskia was already used to the experience, having traveled there with her parents. However, for Colin, he was going there for the first time, and while he had researched and read a lot about the place before embarking on the trip, there was nothing more vivid to him than being there in person.
So, you know, it was quite a big deal to go to Antarctica, you know, and like I come from a small town in Scotland and I didn't really envisage the fact I'd be working on assignment in Antarctica. The first sort of trip when we went there together, we bought a few different pieces of equipment for going there, you know, extra equipment. And one of them was this, a long lens, a 400 millimeter lens. And we were like, yeah, that'd be great for the wildlife, you know. And the first day we arrived in Antarctica, we sort of traveled through the night and you cross what's called the Drake Passage, which is it's regarded as one of the most volatile bodies of water in the world. It wasn't too bad in that particular crossing, but it meant that because it was darkness, we kind of arrived in darkness, and when we woke up, there was sort of this Antarctic landscape in front of you, which was mind-blowing in itself. But it was like gale force winds and like a snowstorm. We were making a landing in a place called Half Moon Island. You get these little Zodiac rib boats that take about 8 people from the main ship onto the island. We'd packed up all our equipment, and you have a lot of equipment when you're down there because, you know, you can't just nip to like a local B&H and pick something up. So we had all our equipment, and it was like 50 mile an hour gale force winds, snowstorm, and we're on this little boat, and I'm like, geez, this is like really hardcore. I don't know if I'm like up to this. But anyway, we landed on the island and got the camera out and put like our protective case around it, and there was like little chinstrap penguins like maybe about 30 meters away, and I just kneeled down, set the tripod up, had my 400 millimeter lens, and started filming like a penguin. I was like, I had this moment, I was like, kind of took it all in. I was like, oh wow, I'm in Antarctica, like filming a penguin, you know. It was like kind of crazy. And I sort of turned around just to look at the landscape. And just as I turned back, my tripod had been blown over and my new 400 millimeter lens had cracked off like a little rock. And that was my first ever sort of 5 minutes in Antarctica. So yeah, it was pretty funny, but also a real lesson on the brutality of that landscape.
The primary role of their expedition is to document the trip for the visitors aboard. From all the footage that Saskia and Colin take, they then create a video documentary of the trip.
And it's usually about 20 minutes, 25 minutes in length. It usually features some of our expedition team who are experts on, we might have someone who's an expert on the behavior of whales. If we get footage of whales, then we'll maybe interview them and they'll sort of talk about that.
Because the focus of their trip is to create a documentary, Saskia's and Colin's equipment is mainly meant to capture video and audio footage.
We try and cover it from all angles. So we have drones that we take down there so we can get like aerial shots. And we have just standard conventional camera bodies with different lenses. And then we've got like an underwater casing that we use so we can try and shoot footage underwater as well.
And then we also like things like that can just help us, like little clips here and there. Like we have a GoPro, you know, with an underwater housing as well, because sometimes that's, you know, quicker and easier than putting your camera in and taking it out of the larger housing too. Yeah. And you can sometimes attach that to like the Zodiacs or the rib boats that Colin was talking about, and you can get some nice shots that way and just try and make our films quite immersive, you know, so that when people look at it, they can get that sense of the fact that they're really in Antarctica.
Yeah, but the equipment as a whole doesn't necessarily change from the equipment we would use if we were on assignment in, you know, like in Europe somewhere. However, the main difficulty is that quite often we're on very small Zodiac boats and we have to have all that equipment with us. It's possibly like a snowstorm and it's windy. So you're constantly trying to protect your equipment whilst being able to, you know, shoot the footage and get the shots. So that's the hardest thing, I think. Yeah. And, you know, it's very cold. So when you're like, when you're putting your hands under the water to try and get underwater footage, it's like you can only last about 20 seconds or, you know, you feel like your hands are going to fall off. So it's quite intense. I remember flying the drone and it's like, it just started snowing instantly and the drone was like 200 meters away. And I was like, ah, we need to try and get this back. Yeah, we've had a few like, few close calls. We had the drone out filming humpback whales, which was really wonderful, like when you film them from the air. And all of a sudden, this kind of mist just started coming in around us and we lost the drone, basically. We couldn't see it. And we could hear it, but we couldn't see it. And, you have a return to home button with the drone, but because you're on a moving ship, you're not like in a static location.
Yeah, your GPS changes.
Yeah, so that was tricky, but we did eventually get the drone down.
We've never lost a drone, which is great, because that's a big no-no down there. We actually have to put flotation devices on the drone so that if the drone falls into the water, you can get it, not so you can rescue the drone, but just so you don't pollute plastics down in Antarctica. It's part of the regulations down there. We had a crab eater come up to our Zodiac. We basically just put the GoPro into the water on a stick and it came right up to it, because obviously there's regulations about how close you can get to animals. But if you're still and you're calm and you wait, sometimes they'll come to you. And so if you've got your camera equipment on you, then you can get some pretty amazing footage. We do have a lot of coverings for our camera and our equipment. So we've got rain jackets for them and they're a lifesaver. They keep them safe. Also, the cameras that we use, the 1DX, is built for photojournalism, to go and take photos in war situations and stuff like that. I mean, they're built to, they are tanks essentially. Yeah. So they are very durable as well. But we're obviously quite overly protective because we want to make sure that our equipment stays safe.
While the equipment is certainly important for Saskia and Colin, sometimes all you need is a GoPro or a mobile phone and a great environment to get the best shot of the day.
You know, we've got some amazing stuff with our GoPro simply because we're on a ship. As soon as something happens, you just turn it on and put it in the water. You know, it takes 3 seconds. It's like, with the best will in the world, it's going to take about 3 minutes before we can set that up. Mm-hmm. So sometimes particularly when you're shooting wildlife, you need to be quick and have stuff to hand.
And we've also found that with our phones too. I mean, we tend to shoot quite a lot with our phones. And I think one of my favorite examples of that is we were on South Georgia, over 70,000 breeding pairs of king penguins. So imagine like king penguins as far as the eye can see. And I was there and I was photographing the penguins because I was trying to get a close up with my long lens. And I look down and there's a king penguin chick just looking right up at me. And you just like at that moment, you just take out your mobile phone and you just take the photo because that's the only, because I couldn't take it with the long lens.
And that photo is probably the most interesting photo out of all the photos we shot because the penguin chick was so close.
Yeah, and it's because it's a wide angle and stuff, you actually get that sense of it being that close.
The expedition is pretty jam-packed for the passengers aboard the ship.
Yeah, our ship goes around the Antarctic Peninsula. So when you cross over from Ushuaia, you tend to go to, one of the first stops might be the South Shetland Islands, which are a few islands that are right above kind of the mainland. We tend to do about 7 stops and each stop is a day, and you can have 100 people on land at a time. So that the ship, the expedition ship, kind of organizes it so that only 100 people are on land. And there's
designated landing sites on the Antarctic Peninsula, and those have been identified by a company called IATO, which kind of regulates tourism down in Antarctica. So you go to these designated sites, and we usually spend about a day at the site, and then maybe we might do something that's more water-based in the evening, so like things like whale watching, because there's a lot of humpback whales down there.
Essentially, there's only certain spots that you can actually land and go ashore, because basically everything is like just massive glaciers and mountains. So there's not a huge amount of places to land, but where you can land sometimes is scientific stations that you can perhaps visit, or just more kind of rocky inshore areas that you can get a small Zodiac boat that carries about 10 people onto. So yeah, and if we do that, we would just go a kind of short hike and maybe go and look at the wildlife. There's probably a penguin colony there. But we do just a lot of traveling about on the boats as well, the small Zodiac boats. And that allows you to get into places that maybe the larger ship wouldn't be able to do. And also you get some really incredible wildlife encounters when you're on those small boats. So it's a real mixture. And sometimes the weather doesn't allow us to land as well. So you're kind of more on the ship and you're kind of viewing from the larger ship.
While waiting for wildlife is part of the task when trying to capture footage of the diverse range of animals in Antarctica, Saskia and Colin consult with scientists and experienced Antarctic enthusiasts aboard the vessel to find the locations where a majority of the animals are located.
You know, you do see wildlife quite regularly. It's not like you have to go searching. It's just that part of our expedition team and our expedition leader is a scientist, or it's been working there for numbers of years. They know where there's large colonies of penguins because they always go back and sort of give birth in the same place and quite often mate with the same partner. So, but yeah, no, there's something, you know, what's really amazing, which I love when we arrive in Antarctica, the thing that I think, oh, we've totally made it, is like when you look off the deck of the ship and you just see penguins porpoising in the water, it's like the coolest thing ever. You're like, no way, like I don't ever see that anywhere else in the world. And you just look out and there's like 40 penguins just like traveling at about 20 miles per hour, just like, yeah, up and down over the waves. And that's kind of cool, yeah, when that happens.
Yeah,
it always makes me smile when I see that. Yeah.
While Saskia and Colin don't specifically categorize their craft as wildlife photographers, they like to find new and alternative and abstract ways to capture nature and the scenery around them.
I think because of our art school background as well, we're kind of always looking to take photos that are maybe a bit different than what we're traditionally used to looking at when we think about wildlife photography.
We don't think of ourselves as wildlife photographers or wildlife filmmakers. It just so happens that when we're on assignment in Antarctica, the wildlife is like our subject or part of our subject. Mm. And in actual fact, I think we both find that quite liberating. We just shoot wildlife as if it was, you know, it could be any subject, you know. I don't feel like we're conditioned to shoot wildlife in a particular way.
Yeah.
I find that really enjoyable because, you know, we end up, like an example of this is Saskia shot this image on a place called Deception Island, and that's in the South Shetland Islands, one of the first group islands that you would reach when you're hitting Antarctic waters. And it's a really incredible place because it's an active caldera, so like a volcanic sort of area. And it has this lovely volcanic dark kind of ash colour everywhere. And then obviously when it snows, there's a really beautiful contrast with it. And it's quite an incredible place. But penguins, they have these things called penguin highways, which is like the kind of roads that the penguins walk on to get to their mating grounds. If you stand back from like an area, whether it be like a glacier or a mountain or a rocky part, or in this case, Deception Island, which was like, it was like a big sort of verge behind where the beach was, that they created these like
amazing, beautiful kind of abstract patterns with this highways, which was just where penguins would be walking. So Saskia created this, like, what I think is a really beautiful abstract black and white image. So if you looked at it, you wouldn't necessarily think that penguins had created that pattern, or that there was any wildlife that was part of that particular image. And I always feel that we're trying to kind of create work that's maybe slightly different when using wildlife as a subject, rather than just depicting the wildlife in a more conventional way.
And I think that's what drives us there as well, because obviously, you know, we're there to document and to capture make the film and also document the trip with images as well. But in terms of our own practice, we're always looking for those kind of moments that provide for a unique image that kind of makes something a little bit different.
Some wildlife photography that I see is incredible, but also sometimes I think, well, yeah, it's a penguin, you know, like that's a photograph of a penguin, but we're trying to find a way to kind of tell a slightly different story, or to try and talk about the environment and the penguin's relationship with a colony and how that sort of is incorporated into a single image or some moving images that we create. So I guess we're always trying to think of the kind of bigger picture when we're working with wildlife.
To travel to Antarctica through the memories and experiences of Saskia and Colin was such a true inspiration during the making of this episode.
From understanding the extremes they go to catch truly perfect shots, to the encounters with wildlife and the untouched barren land of the Antarctic region, it's all worth it in the end to capture that one perfect shot.
We live in a world that's constantly changing from one moment to the next. But with simply one still or moving piece of photography, you can relive the moments over and over again.
That's the true power of a photographer. Being there to capture each moment, no matter how big or small the changes are, from one still to the next.
This is
Design Atlas.
To find out more about Saskia Coulson and Colin Tennant, we've included their Instagram, TikTok, and website links in the show notes. We definitely recommend you check them out.
Also, don't forget to join us for our next episode by subscribing to the show and leaving a positive review. We really appreciate it.
To learn more about Design Atlas and to sign up for updates, visit our website at designatlaspod.com. If you want to get in touch with us or have a topic idea for our next episode, feel free to send us an email at hello@designatlaspod.com. or DM us on Instagram at Design Atlas Pod. Thanks for listening. I'm Megan Ludke.
And I'm Jens Springsjord.